Hey, TERFs and trannies. This is Nina Paley, and you're listening to Heterodorks.
And I am Corinna Cohn, your blasphemer for this episode.
We're both blasphemers. I spent an entire bike ride trying to think of plays on the word blasphemer or heretic or something. But whatever else we talk about, we always do have some gender stuff to talk about. So when I was texting you, I mentioned that there are all these creeps in comics. Why are there so many? And I realized that it's not a recent thing, that 30 years ago when I first got into comics and probably went to my first comic convention, actually it was more than 30 years ago, 32 years ago, this was way before trans was a thing or trans kids or anything like that. But comics was full of creeps. It was full of, I guess, what we would call perverts. That's such a loaded word, right? Like when I was in San Francisco being all sex positive, my pervert friends happily referred to themselves as perverts, right? Kind of like how my tranny friends referred to themselves as trannies. They had a sense of humor. They were people that, you know, knew that they had kinks and knew that they were well outside the mainstream. And they were quite responsible about their kinks, and they were just like, yeah, us perverts.
Isn't there some sort of, what is it called, the Folsom Street Fair?
The Folsom Street Fair, yes, I went to that all the time. It was fun.
I've never been there, but what I see of pictures of it are people who are in various states of nakedness out on the street, some people in collars, all sorts of different sex toys being displayed. Is that how it was in real life?
Yeah.
Okay, that seems like a good amount of family fun there.
Well, it wasn't promoted to families. That's the thing. It's like back in the day, this was considered something for adults.
There was this picture I saw last year or maybe the year before of a couple of men that were dressed up like dogs.
Yeah.
And they were on their knees and they had collars on. There was a little girl that was like petting them.
Yeah, that's bad. That's wrong. I'd like to believe that my old pervert friends from the 90s would vehemently disapprove of that.
It was a weird thing to process, because on the surface, it's just a couple of guys playing dress up. And if they had been wearing furry costumes, or if they'd been wearing, let's say, mascot costumes, it would have seemed perfectly innocent. But the gear that they were wearing looked like it was specifically bondage and discipline gear. It looked like the activity that they were performing was overtly sexual. And so when you interpose a child into that, it feels wrong. It feels like the child is having some of their innocence taken from them.
This reminds me of when I was a child. We did not have porn in our house, but my father played poker with other mathematicians. They called them statistics seminars. And there were various decks of cards, including a Playboy deck of cards. And the only difference between the Playboy deck and the other decks is that the aces had these sexy women drawings. So they were like women wearing black opera length gloves and thigh high black stockings. And they were just line drawings. You know, I saw those cards as a child, and that has permanently affected my ideas about what is supposed to be sexy. I mean, I don't know how old I was when I saw those, you know, 5 or something. And it's just like, yeah, I can remember like where that came from.
Children are really impressionable.
Yeah. So that little girl, you know, has some associations with dog collars. And the thing is, I had no idea of what sex was, right? Like I had no sexual feelings or anything like that, but I knew that these displayed women were important and desirable somehow, right? Like they were the center, that they were an attractor of attention, an important one, that there was something important about this.
Almost mystical.
Yeah, it was pretty mystical, actually. Plus they were on cards, you know, cards are mystical.
The symbols on cards are mystical.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of mystical symbology related to cards.
Cards and sex and all that stuff. So the other thing I wanted to talk about today was eunuchs.
What do you want to talk about eunuchs?
Well, there is this radical feminist idea, which I agree with, which is that there's no true trans, that nobody is actually born in the wrong body, and there's no, like, if you're looking at trans people, you can't say, well, this is really a trans person, and this is a pretend trans person who's not really trans, right? The radical feminist idea is that, like, look, nobody is really literally trans. It's, you cannot actually change sex, and you can certainly identify as the opposite sex or no sex or an attack helicopter. There's no, like, litmus test for this. And I agree with that, but I think that there is a material physical difference between trans-identified males that have become eunuchs and those that have not. We usually say transsexuals as opposed to transgender or other trans-identified people. We're talking about males here. Because another thing I learned is that, or acknowledged, is that there's a huge double standard as far as eunuchness goes between men and women. So I asked on Spinster whether others had considered that there is actually a real material category that we don't have to even use the word trans to describe. It's just eunuchs. Like, eunuchs are real things. They are men who have had their gonads removed or destroyed. So I was thinking, this does create a different material category of male, a category that is really not considered male, given that male genitalia are referred to as manhood, and that eunuchs are men without manhood. I got a reply on Spinster from a woman who said, well, separate material category, are women who have hysterectomies a separate material category of woman? And then I had to rethink all of this, because there are lots of women with hysterectomies, and even though some people, I guess, will say that your uterus is your womanhood or your vagina is your womanhood, women don't have the same standards, right? Like, we don't walk around fearing being effeminated, whereas most of us know men, those of us who are heterosexual women or homosexual males, have been with men who are very anxious about being emasculated metaphorically. That said, I still think that it's a big deal for a man to be castrated or emasculated. Anyway, then I went more into the eunuch rabbit hole and learned that there are, in fact, men with castration fetishes. I guess this shouldn't surprise anybody. And they seek out people called cutters who will give them back alley castrations and give them a full fetish experience. But these men are the minority, and there are actually quite a number of eunuchs amongst us who are closeted, who are eunuchs because they had testicular cancer and had to remove or otherwise destroy their testicles in order to arrest the progress of the cancer. And that made me think that there is no place in our current Western civilization for eunuchs. It's kind of like even a creepy term for us, but the history of civilization is full of eunuchs. It almost makes me think that eunuchs are a part of civilization. And when I say civilization, I mean societies that have ruling classes. Eunuchs have been a part of that, I think, everywhere, except among Hebrews. Hebrews were not supposed to have eunuch classes.
They used Windows.
Or Mac.
Right.
I mean, maybe they existed in societies where there were eunuchs. So I suppose if they had palace eunuchs, they just weren't going to be other Hebrews. But that makes me think, like, that our modern society is unique and perhaps missing something. Because we are highly, highly civilized and highly stratified. It's almost like we have a hole in society where eunuchs are supposed to be. And I do wonder if that is somewhat related to the current gender craze.
I think we had a comment recently that accused us of alienating the left and the right. And that we were building on top of that by alienating people who were perfectly valid but also had mental disorders.
Hey, it wasn't mental disorders, it was personality disorders.
Sorry, that's what I meant to say.
It really bugs me that people conflate personality disorders with mental illness and they're not the same thing.
No, they're not. And I had a memory error there on account of either a personality disorder or a mental illness, and I don't know which one it was. But I thought, you know what would be fun tonight would be to alienate even more people. So I'm going to talk about how the gender critical movement have had such a terrible and useless strategy for fighting against gender identity over the last 10 years, for sure, but especially over the last 5 years. Myopic infighting, inability to create any sort of coalitions, any inability to bring moderates on either the left or the right to the table. This isn't just an opinion that I have, because today, the whole spear of the gender critical argument today was grasped and thrust by Marjorie Taylor Greene, the crazy ass congresswoman from Georgia, who is the QAnon conspiracy person.
Right.
The person now, right now in America, as of today, who is leading the charge, which ought to be led by rational, considerate, persuasive, gender-critical allies, is now in the hands of a QAnon idiot. There have been people who've spent time and effort trying to meet with their representatives and senators and try to move the issue closer towards the center. It's not a lack of trying on some people's parts, but as a movement, it has been a complete failure to bring the case to a moderate representative, to a moderate spokesperson, and have them articulate the case. And now we have Barbie Napoleon, Marjorie Taylor Greene, as the banner holder for the gender critical argument. That's what's going on right now.
I am recalling when I was in Washington, D.C. 2 years ago, which is when I met you. And I followed Natasha Chart around Congress as she went from office to office, alerting representatives about the so-called Equality Act. When I think of gender-critical feminist activism, I think about her and Kara Dansky and the women that were active in D.C. and are still active. They, I think, are doing everything right. As a movement, as a cultural movement, I don't know how a movement itself strategizes, you know? Like the smart women that are strategizing, they're doing the best that they can, right? Like they're really trying to lead. You can't make everybody follow. But the women that I consider leaders, I think are doing a good job. Like there's the woman, are you part of the Women's Human Rights Campaign?
I'm unaware of it, actually.
Oh, well, check out the Women's Human Rights Campaign. There's a declaration you can sign, and they are very nuts and bolts. And they are doing, you know, the drudgery of on-the-ground political organizing. There's a cultural movement that's bigger than this that we encounter online that is, you know, going to consist of people we encounter online. But I don't know. I think of like really amazing gender critical women activists that are just working their butts off. being saner. And the thing is, I have no taste for this, right? Like when I followed Natasha around, it's because like I was in DC already and I admired Natasha and I was like, okay, I'll learn about how this works a little bit. And, you know, I hate it. I hate it, hate it, hate it. I hate dealing with politicians. I hate everything about that environment. I feel it's very triggering for me, right? So it's not the field that I should be in, but like kudos to these women that are actually doing it.
I have no criticism of any individuals. So what I'm saying does not apply to any particular group, but as a movement, the people who best understand the concerns of women, who understand the radical feminist argument, or who have the gender critical point of view to be able to criticize gender ideology, those people are not leading the movement anymore. The right and the crazy QAnon right have lifted up the banner and are running with it. So I'm not going to criticize any individuals, but just looking at the pieces on the board, the gender critical movement has lost, and it's going to be so difficult to oppose the Equalities Act at this point, or the Equality Act. It's going to be so difficult to get the average person to have a moderate view on this issue.
I mean, this has been like tearing apart gender critical feminists for a while. There's the side that says, just don't associate with people on the right, presumably because you might end up with a nutcase like this person you're talking about. And then the other is, no, we have to have coalitions. These are women's issues, and women's issues transcend parties. We need to build coalitions with women, regardless of party affiliation. What do you think people could have done? You know, what do you think leaders could have done?
I have this horrible idea that one of the biggest obstacles to the gender critical movement gaining that influence is that the primary components of the gender critical movement are also identitarian.
Identitarian as in women only?
Yes. In order to succeed politically, you need some degree of pragmatism. That when you have an identitarian movement that cannot work with people that they don't have a lot of alignment with, you can't make those incremental advances.
So then what you're suggesting is that the gender critical movement should be separate from the women's movement. That the women's movement is that there's overlap, but that there should be something called the gender critical movement that is not the women's movement.
I'm declaring this today, Nina. There is no gender critical movement anymore. There's always going to be a women's movement. There's always going to be women's liberation. No question. That's always going to be a thing. But the fight against gender identity now is owned wholly by the right, and not by the moderate right, by the elements on the right who are demagogues. It is an issue owned completely by the demagogues, and the people who do not want to be manipulated by the demagogues are going to oppose anything the demagogues say. They're going to be contrarian. So the more that somebody like Marjorie Taylor Greene shouts that there's only two genders, the more the people who hate her are going to be open to the idea that there are more than two genders.
Right.
The gender critical movement is done. It's over.
Was there a gender critical movement?
It never got off the ground in the United States, but I think in the UK, they were able to organize politically and effectively. You've got Women's Place UK. There were women who organized talks where they brought in different points of view. They were generally aligned, but that came from different backgrounds. I haven't seen anything like that in the United States. There's no Women's Place US here, is there? Not that I've heard of.
Women have tried so hard, you know? It's been so hard to resist this. Well, we've just been trying really hard. I agree with you that we're screwed. And actually, even all the organizers fighting the Equality Act, they also knew it was likely to pass, you know? It's not like they had any illusions about that. They just fought anyway, or fight anyway.
There's absolutely nothing certain that's going to happen in Washington. There's always a scrum.
Well, I think it's going to pass, and I think we're going to spend the next 10 years suffering the consequences and trying to claw it back, or maybe just totally regressing, you know?
Yep. Well, that's all I wanted to say. So adios, gender crits. I can't even say good try because we lost.
But we love you.
We do.
Is that it? We can't be friends anymore? The battle's over. Go back. Stop fighting together.
The battle is over.
The battle for that particular thing, but it's only begun. I mean, it's like, yeah, things are getting worse. But that means we gotta carry on.
That is definitely a cheer up the troops sort of perspective. But the only thing that will actually work in reality is building a strategy, creating coalitions, and trying to get politicians who are moderates on both sides of the political divide to understand.
But isn't that what they've been busting their asses trying to do that?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because what matters are results. And if a small group of women, if three or four women couldn't get it done, then the first thing that they needed to do is build their organization. Because if three or four people can't get it done, they need 300 or 400 people or 3,000 or 4,000 people.
Corinna, build your organization. This is when Sita Sings the Blues started becoming famous, I was getting all this praise for, quote, building my audience, right? As if it was something that I had done. It's like, that's not how it works. You put the stuff out there, and if it's viable, people find it. And certainly they've done, you know, more than their duty in terms of putting it out there. If the groups didn't come together, that's not a failure of strategy. That's a sign of the climate that we're in.
Nah, you make the climate.
You make it possible. You make it possible. So if it's possible in the climate, then there's something to center around. And they have. I've known so many women working so hard to do this. And it's like, it wasn't enough.
Let me go back to Women's Place UK one more time.
Okay.
The women in the UK modeled what success looks like. They were able to get self-ID ended. Self-ID is off the table in the UK now, and that was the main thing that they were trying to achieve. The main thing that should have been sought here are changes to the Equality Act so that there wasn't this conflation of sex and gender identity. That was the main goal that should have been the target, and the same techniques that the Women's Place UK had, which was bringing a lot of women together so that you had a constituency that was interesting for politicians to pay attention to. They had speakers, seminars. That was a strategy that worked. Maybe it only would have worked in the UK. That's possible. That could be the case.
But I guess what I'm saying is that women have been doing that. They have been doing that here. I mean, you just said yourself that you didn't know about the Women's Human Rights Coalition.
I didn't. When did that come about?
Last year? I mean, we are a big country. Of course, Women's Human Rights Coalition is international.
What I can tell you for a fact is that the LGBT, and especially the trans element of that, have been organizing. They've been extremely involved. They've been raising money. They've been writing letters. They've been doing all these campaigns.
It's not that they've been raising money. They have money.
Have money. I've been here when it was possible to know most of the movers and shakers in the trans community. So it's not like these people are part of these huge networks of wealth. They built things.
They built things, and then they got floods of money.
How did they get floods of money?
From the Pritzker, from the, what's it called? What's this thing called?
Yeah, the Tawani Foundation.
The Tawani Foundation. Yeah, all of these LGBT groups, they've gotten floods of money earmarked specifically for trans stuff.
Yes. How did they do that?
By having some very wealthy, very prominent autogynephiles, billionaires.
You don't think that there are billionaire women? There are.
Yes.
In the Pritzker family, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So where there's more women than there are trans people, there's more women millionaires than there are trans millionaires. So who's going to the women that have the money and making the argument saying you need to help fund us?
How
so
many
that we
billionaire
can
women
and girls' rights?
How many? I don't actually know what the ratio of billionaire women to billionaire men is.
It's irrelevant to my point.
No, it's not irrelevant. It's really not. Because the thing is that the trans movement is fundamentally misogynistic, right? That's what's underlying everything.
It's not that you're wrong, but it doesn't matter. Because even if there's misogyny, like if you don't organize, if you don't get these resources that are out there, they absolutely are. If you're not doing all of that stuff, to win, you lose. But, and that's all I'm saying. That's the only thing I'm saying.
But I guess what I'm saying is that, I mean, the resources are out there, but it's pretty clear that if you do, or, you know, if you try to organize for this, what happens is you get canceled. It's like they got there first. They were able to cancel every academic, every what?
That's just a mentality.
What's just a mentality?
Being canceled. I mean, there are absolutely consequences to being canceled. So it's not only just a mentality.
No, but I'm saying that, like, if you try to start an organization to get these funds, what happens is you lose your funds.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying is that's just a mentality.
It's
because
not,
still money out there. There's still money out there.
How can I say this? It's like when you think about the women's shelters, right? The women's shelters that provided services for women and didn't let men in and lost their funding.
They lost their public funding.
Yeah, they lost it. Come on. I mean, this is, it's
where don't you think that they put up GoFundMes and that women who find that their loss of public funding abhorrent go and just drop as much money as they can on the women's shelter? Of course that's what happens.
You really think that women giving money to the women's shelter are comparable in number and power to the men giving money to this misogynistic movement?
As long as we have the mentality that we can't compete, we're going to structure all of our actions based on that assumption.
Right, but the thing is that these women did do it. They didn't have that mentality. They didn't censor themselves first. They tried. They tried, and they got their asses kicked. And they continue to try, and they continue to get their asses
yes.
kicked. They were.
And that's what I'm saying. It's trying is not enough. I have this argument with my mom sometimes when she tries to fix her computer, and she tries and tries and tries, but because she doesn't know what she's doing, she makes it worse. But when I talk to her about it, she gets upset because she says, well, I tried. It doesn't count if you try. It counts if you fix it.
So do you? But you're saying that now there's nothing to be fixed? That like
there's nothing to be fixed. You lost. What you need to do, you have lost so much potential. If this Equality Act passes, it hasn't passed yet. If the Equality Act passes, you're done. You need to go back so far to the drawing board that you have to start from basic principles. You have to start from first principles now.
I know that.
The fact that Marjorie Taylor Greene is now the leader of the opposition to gender ideology, you've lost. You don't have the ability to wrest the banner from her anymore. So you need to go all the way back to first principles and figure out how can you create a competing voice against Marjorie Taylor Greene that is still trying to accomplish the same thing. How do you recruit the person who's going to be the voice of reason when the craziest motherfucker in Congress is now your spokesperson? You have to do that. I'm not saying you. I'm not saying you personally, Nina. I'm saying as a movement, we have to, okay? Because I also think that conflating sex and gender identity is wrong, and I'm opposed to a law that conflates those things. We have to figure out how to organize so that we find a moderate position that's not some sort of crazy identitarian or totalitarian or just adamantly my way or the highway position that protects women's and girls' rights and still is able to build a coalition around protecting those things.
But you just said that there's no point because we've lost.
There's no point in their having a gender critical movement anymore.
So what do you call this movement that protects
women
and girls' rights?
I would call it feminism if that didn't mean validating men in tight skirts nowadays.
So why wouldn't you call it a gender critical movement?
You can, but if you continue laboring under the illusion that the movement still has any momentum, you might not be able to direct your resources correctly. Let me put it this way. I know you're gathering your thoughts, but let me put it this way. The gender critical movement was against gender ideology. There is no more gender critical movement. The ideology has put itself into law. The most vocal proponents against it are on the right. That's never going to be taken away now. There's no point fighting against gender ideology. It's out of control. So if you want a movement now, it needs to be focused on something tangible and achievable. I would say focusing on something like protecting the rights for girls and women to compete in high school and college sports against members of the same sex.
Mm-hmm.
Solely focusing on that would be a good strategy.
Well, but that's what Save Women's Sports is for. I mean,
okay, that needs to grow and have people who are moderates willing to support it. I know Tulsi Gabbard has.
Yeah.
I don't mean to be putting you on the defensive, Nina. I don't want you to feel defensive about it. I just want you to look at the pieces on the board and see where we're at.
I'm not a political strategist. That's not my thing, right? Like I just sit here and watch things. I'm not a strategist. I have a real aversion to the American political system because to me it's hopelessly corrupt. At the same time though, I mean I appreciate others who, you know, are willing to get that dirt all over them. Again, that's why I followed Natasha around Congress buildings when I was in DC, right? Like she was actually willing to do that. This is not the thing that I do. I'm not a political strategist.
I'm not accusing you of not being one.
No, I understand that. It's just that it's like the resistance goes on, you know, like on the ground, all the things that, you know, whether or not this law is passed, we want to encourage people to resist, right? Like here I am, the copyright abolitionist, right? I could have gone like, oh, you know, there's no copyleft movement because copyright terms were extended again, or oh, look at this, you know, horrible copyright laws. Like, okay, that is horrible. It's really horrible. Long live free culture. My strategy isn't to change the law. The thing is that this, like for me, it's like I don't really care that much because this isn't the area of my interest. This isn't the area where I have any effect. But the women that it is their area, I've just seen them work their asses off. Right? That's just what I want to say. It's like, it's not mine, but man, I've seen women like sacrifice a lot and like work so freaking hard. So yeah, they lost. They're in the process of losing, but boy, did they try hard. And it's like, yeah, they needed to try hard, or, you know, sometimes terrible things happen no matter how hard you try. Right? Like it turns out that we can't control that much and we can only do our best. And sometimes that's not enough to get the outcomes that we want.
I don't want to describe myself as a strategist. I'm not really a tactician in any sense or a student of strategy. But if I lose, the first thought that I have is the next time I get a shot at this, what do I need to do differently to win? That sort of retrospective on how can we have a chance of succeeding next time? The people who worked so hard on this, that's something that has to be done.
And they're doing it. That's totally what they do.
Having an attitude that we tried as hard as we can and we don't have to change anything next time isn't going to get you to win next time.
Well, no, but I'm sure that's not what they're doing. They're very bright political strategists. I'm sure they're not doing that at all. I'm sure they're planning their next thing.
I don't want to be a huge asshole, but if you're a really bright political strategist, you win.
You win. Well, you failed, Corinna. You have failed. And if the problem was, as you say, that men weren't welcome to go by side by side on this, then I don't really think that's the fault of the women that were excluding males. I think that was the fault of males who left it up to the women.
There is some truth to that, for sure.
Thank you very much. I think perhaps you are understandably butthurt by some of the nasty treatment you've received from some women.
I don't want to address that, but let me instead say that I have put myself out publicly on a number of different venues, criticizing, being a trans person, visibly criticizing some of the most misogynistic aspects of the transgender movement and transgender ideology. So it is not that I am sitting in my living room and pretending like I'm not involved in this. I have put myself out there.
I know. We've all put ourselves, not all, but those of us who have put ourselves out there have put ourselves out there. But you did say that you thought that it failed. You said a while ago that you thought that it failed because of excluding men.
Did I say that tonight?
Yeah. I thought so. We have this recorded, so we can go back and...
We do. I kind of thought that I said that they failed to build enough a big enough coalition.
Big enough coalitions, right. And
oh, and was, I described them as an identitarian. I could see where it, in retrospect, that it might have sounded like I said that, but I don't think that the sex class of woman is an identitarian group. I think people who flock around the argument of what is a woman and qualifying that sort of thing as part of their experience of creating a group or a culture, that's what makes it identitarian.
Well, tell me more about that. So you're saying that you think that the gender critical movement was an identitarian movement?
Yes.
And the
confusing.
Well, you said I'm trying to keep up with you.
Me too.
Flitting a little.
Me too. I don't know my past from my present tense currently.
You're flitting little.
Yes,
analysis
it was
here.
It was an identitarian movement.
Okay, so what? Describe the identity. What was the identity here that they were?
That in setting itself up as an opponent of an identitarian movement without strongly establishing its own viewpoint or principle beyond it simply being a critical movement, it as a mirror image of an identitarian movement, it itself was identitarian. It wasn't bringing a different understanding. It was just attacking gender ideology.
I see. So perhaps we would call something the material reality movement.
I'm good with that. The materialists? I mean, we are living in a material world. And I am a material...
Eunuch.